Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Tuesday, 7th February 2023. Namo Bunsu Sejia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsu Sejia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsu Sejia Moni Fo. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa, Namo Guansing Pusa, Namo Ami Tofo, Namo Ami Tofo, Namo Ami Tofo, Namo Milofo, Namo Milofo, Namo Milofo, Namo Pusien Pusa, Namo Pusien Pusa, Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Dijang Wang Pusa, Namo Dijang Wang Pusa, Namo Dijang Wang Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuto Bhagawa, Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghang namami. Okay, before we continue the chanting, we will make the offering together. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Now we shall chant the Theravada tradition. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kame sumichachara viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musawada viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect Triple Gem. Buddhang Pujami. Dhammang Pujhe. Sanghang Pujhe. So remember the four support. Awareness-based meditation is to develop this inner awareness within. So the best way to do it is to understand clearly the four support, how it support us to develop that mind. So the first support is relax. Relax into every mind state that arise. Whatever happen, whatever arise, just relax into it. Even thinking come, relax into it. Whatever activity of form and mind arise, just relax into it. When you have tension, stress within, or various movement of mind state that cause you to be restless, you still relax into it. So relaxation is very important. Ability to relax actually make the mind peaceful. When you relax, it's like you are at ease. No problem. Means physically peaceful. Mentally peaceful. When you have problem, your mind tend to think a lot because of that fear, the worry, the anxiety, the sorrow, and lamentation. Then you become restless. And these are mental hindrance because you cannot understand. Thing is just the way it is. No amount of fear, worry, anxiety can help you with the problem or solve your problem. So the only way to understand thing is to be in a state of relaxed inner awareness without thought. Without thought, you are peaceful. Without thought, you are tranquil, you have clarity. Then you can act, you can see things clearly, you can develop understanding and understand what is happening. Then with the Dhamma understanding, you can solve your problem. You can develop the solution. So this is how we make use of the four support to develop the meditative mind state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, so that the awareness nature within starts to stabilize. Then we can be in the meditative state while doing the formal meditation, then later on carry into life. When you can be peaceful, mindful, heedful in the midst of life, then you are a very good Dhamma practitioner. So that is the reason why awareness-based meditation is very important. So ability to relax body and mind is very important. It's not easy, but can be done. Whatever problem, whatever that disturb you, haunt you, or make you full of fear, worry, anxiety, tension, stress within, or even what they call uncomfortable state, like sickness or disease, you can develop the wisdom to endure it and be at peace with it. Because, like the Buddha said, we have two choices: cling on to it, hold on to it through delusion, to develop the suffering, the misery, and become miserable. The other way is to accept this as a reality, the reality of the First Noble Truth, reality of the form. That's why this body of ours, which is made up of elements only, no knowing, cannot be a permanent unchanging entity, cannot be us, and it goes the way of nature. It will grow old, get sick, and die. So when you have this understanding, you can come to terms with all this reality, then accept them for what they are and be at peace despite what happened. When it comes to mental problem, also same. You only need to understand it and resolve it amicably. When we resolve it, then the issue is no more. When you don't perceive it with negativity, but when you perceive with the Dhamma understanding, then you can come to terms with whatever that arises within the world. The world is the world. People are just the way they are. Develop their understanding, then be at peace. Then develop the meditative awareness within to act. So the first support of relaxing the mind is very important. Some may not understand. That's why in the early days, I remember, I teach you the loving kindness metta meditation. We had the book Bhavana. You go and look, metta Bhavana. Read it up. Develop the meditative mind of love. Then from there, you can actually sleep very well, relax, and be happy with a lot of metta within. Then the other one is the mind sweeping method. Whatever tension, tightness, or stress within any part of your body, you just relax into it. So, starting with your forehead, when you feel any tension, tightness, or stress within, you just soothingly relax it. Relax, relax, and relax. Feel it soothingly relax. Every part, starting with the forehead. Then sweep it down to your eye. Then feel your eye. Feel your eye muscle. Any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, relax into it. Then your facial muscle is the same. Then you sweep it down to your neck, shoulder, to your hand, back to shoulder. Then sweep down into your chest area, slowly down to the heart area. Relax into every stage until you feel your entire body and mind relax. Then you sweep it further down to your stomach. Then your abdomen, your buttock, then your leg, then you reverse the whole thing. This mind sweeping method is very important. When you just feel and relax, you don't think. So it's a way, in a way, trying to help you to develop awareness within. Because feeling without thought is very near to awareness. The pure feeling is the pure consciousness, actually. Because this mind, the mundane mind, before you are trained, before you develop the ability to be aware within, it needs something to hold on to for it to stay there or be peaceful. That's why normal people who don't understand, they find it like impossible to meditate, to develop the meditative mind. So they come up with method, technique, and object of meditation to anchor the mind so that it does not wander off and create all the thinking. But for us who know how to relax and maintain awareness, we don't have to do that. We don't need any method or technique. We just make full use of whatever we understand to relax into it. So relaxation is key, number one. After you relax, you can maintain awareness. Maintaining awareness is very important. Initially, is whatever happened, just aware, finish. Then, again, maintain awareness. Whatever that arises within your senses, because we are a physical living being. As a human being, we have our six senses. Five physical and the mental. This extender can be very active and can create a lot of activity when we don't have the understanding. That's why we will have a lot of thinking going on. Sometimes this thinking are very habitual, heedless, born of mental hindrance. because we don't have the spiritual faculty to counter it. So before you understand all this, you will have problem with meditation. So our this four support is to enable you to settle down into all this in a very relatively easy manner. But of course, if you develop the spiritual faculty, it will help you much further. Then even without the spiritual faculty, you do metta, it will also help you. Then you do the mind sweeping method, it also will help you. While doing the mind sweeping method, you can actually merge the two, metta and the mind sweeping method together. For metta, we actually learn to relax by visualizing ourselves facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can radiate a radiant smile, means you are happy, you are peaceful. Then you naturally relax your facial muscle. And that is a very good way of understanding how to relax. When you are happy, when there's joy, when you are peaceful, you are relaxed. That's why when you start to have that radiant smile, you relax. Then you start off the metta by radiating to yourself, by reciting verbally or silently within, "May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy." While you recite it, you must feel it. Feel your body and mind having this well-being and happiness. Then may it too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May keep myself happy and peaceful. Then after that, you can radiate to your loved ones. And may my loved ones can be your parent, your children, your brothers and sisters, your good friend, or somebody whom you love. May they all too also be well and happy, feel the well-being and happiness and radiate this to them. You can visualize them too, having this happiness and joy. And may they all to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. Then you can end with, may there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our heart. So this love, peace and joy are very important mind state. Then after that, you can extend all this metta to all your neighbors, all beings within your vicinity. Then you extend it out to the whole country, the whole nation, and the whole continent and the planet. Then after that, the solar system, the Milky Way, the universe. That's how you do your metta. And that one will settle your mind down. You will feel very calm. Then after that, you realize the mind sweeping method become like very easy for you to develop. So these are skillful means which you can actually adopt. Okay, for those who already know, the first three support I already explained: relax, maintain awareness. Got two part. First is aware, finish, aware, finish. Then continue to maintain awareness. Don't try to know, don't try to do. The knowing is the perception, which is the thought process. The doing is also by the thought. When you try to know and try to do, you create thinking. Then you cannot be in the state of mindful awareness within. So understand this. Then after that, the mind will settle down. It will become very quiet, very peaceful. Then you will suddenly come to realize that once your Sankara activity, thought process all stop, there is a deep tranquility within, like completely quiet and still. When you realize that there is the beginning, there is the beginning of understanding the two mind. You have another mind which is without thought, which is just aware within, without any movement, any activity, or any aggregates of mind. So aware, maintain awareness, to stabilize the awareness nature, to realize the true mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind, then use it to meditate, okay? Then after that, you are skillful already, you have developed that until very stable, then you can move on to the fourth support, which is trust. Trust your nature to do the meditation without the interference of thought process, your memory, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning, your belief system, etc. You just relax, maintain awareness, and silence everything. Then stay at the heart and let the awareness nature detect the gateway to your nature within. That one is more difficult. You don't do in the early stage, yeah? Unless you already develop the first three support until very stable, then you are in the position to do it, then only you move into it. So don't be too eager to do the fourth support. In fact, for only the sainthood way, you don't have to do the fourth support. You can realize sotapannaship, sakadagamiship, anagami, or even arahantship with the first three support. Then stabilize the inner awareness, leading to the stability of daily mindfulness. Means you are mindful throughout the day, most of the time, in the midst of life. Not only in formal meditation, but in normal life situation. You can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. This is the meditative mind state that you need to make use of to develop the stability of daily mindfulness, so that you can be heedful in the midst of life, leading to sati sampajana, invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teachings of the king of sages, which gives heaven and release nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chokawalisu atra gacchantu devata saddhammang munirajasa sunantu sakamokkadang. Dhamma sonan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma sonan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma sonan kalo ayang badanta. Itatasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Iti piso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho. Vijja charana sampanno sukato loka. Sattadeva-manosanam buddho-bhagavati svagato-bhagavata-dhammo-sanditiko-akaliko ehipasiko-opanayiko pajyatang-veditabho Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Uyopatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Samicipatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Yadidam Chattari Purisayukkani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Sakkasangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakkhineyo Anjalikaraneyo Anuttaram Punyanketam Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, we shall continue from where we stopped. We are at page 424 of this volume 3, chapter 2, Expedient Devices, the commentary by Master Shen Hua, the wonderful Dharma Lotus Flower Sutta, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. So Shen Hua's commentaries. Sariputta, says Sakyamuni Buddha, this is all done so that they may attain the one Buddha vehicle, which is the supreme vehicle. So according to a commentary, Shen Hua said, the Buddha of the three period of time, past, present, and future, spoke the Dhamma for the same reason. It was also for one Buddha vehicle, which they call it the supreme vehicle or the Buddhahood vehicle, the Bodhisattva way, can be realized or attained. They use the word attain here. Sariputta, in the world of the 10 directions, there are not even 2 vehicles, how much the less 3. So the commentary says, throughout the Buddha world, of the 10 directions, there are not even 2 vehicles. You could say the 2 vehicles were the great and the small vehicle. That's why you read the Theravada Sutta, they don't like the word small. At first they were called Hinayana, not Theravada. So Hina is small, whereas the one that transmit to China, Japan, Korea, East Asia, they are called Mahayana. Yana is vehicle. So Maha is great. Or they call it the Da Chen. Then Hinayana is a small vehicle or Xiao Chen. They don't like the word. So they change it to Thera. Theravada. So Thera means the eldest, those who have been ordained for more than 20 years. They are called the Theras, Theravada. So the teachings of the Theras. So these are the commonly accepted vehicles. But under the Theravada tradition, They again subdivide the teaching further. They call it the sound hearer vehicle. The sound hearer means those who cultivate for the sainthood way, to realize the sainthood, the four stages of sainthood. Sotapanaship, Sakadagami, Anagami, and finally Arahanta. So these are the first vehicle. Then if you move on further, the Theravada tradition, they go beyond the sound hearer, the sainthood way, to what they call the Pacheka Buddhas. So this Pacheka Buddha, sometimes they call it the silent Buddha. So Pacheka Buddha got two types. One type of Pacheka Buddha is they on their own, they realize the dwelling Paticca-samuppada and awaken to the truth, the form of the truth. So realizing the Pacheka Buddha's enlightenment via the dwelling Paticca-samuppada can happen during the period when the sasana is not there. Means there is no sasana, no Sammasambuddha's teaching around. Although the teaching exists within nature, but there is no Sammasambuddha to proclaim it. That's why there is no Buddha sasana. So during that time, there is no Four Noble Truths. Not to say the tree turning. That's why you have to, through observation, through meditative observation, realize the profound Paticca-samuppada, means understanding how we function as a human being. That one is relatively much easier. Because if you were to be mindful, aware, heedful most of the time throughout the day, then through that silent inner awareness, or what we call mindfulness, we can actually understand clearly how we function as a human being. And by going through that process of direct seeing, observation, we will come to know who we are, what we are, and how our mind, the mundane mind, function following the Paticca-samuppada, the dwelling. When you have the ability to realize that, then you can also, through that process, understand all the other nature's law that governs life and existence. Then you can move into what we call the law of karma. You reap what you sow. But without the sasana, without the Buddha's teaching, like what we had during this sasana, it is very difficult. Because you need a Sammasambuddha with that type of perfection to understand the other two spiritual law. We had three spiritual law that we need to develop understanding in order for us to understand life completely and clearly. First is the law of karma. That one, even the Buddha himself proclaimed, he said, the law of karma is the most complex and it's not easy to comprehend. You need to really cultivate for a long period of time, following the Bodhisattva way, developing the parami, the perfection, the virtue, the understanding extensively before one can actually develop that clear understanding. Because there is so much to it, a lot of variation. Unless you have gone through life extensively over a long period of existence in various world system, evolution, to really understand and comprehend all things. That's why we need to do the perfection, to develop the complete understanding. Then after that, the last of the spiritual law, because after the law of karma, karma niyama, is citta niyama, means how we function as a human, how our mundane mind move, operate, and function. And that one is paticca-sammuppada. That one, if you have mindfulness, awareness, heedfulness, you can understand. You can realize it. Yeah. That's why the moment you realize paticca-sammuppada, you will also realize the Four Noble Truths. Because the Four Noble Truths is very profound, very powerful. But Four Noble Truths alone can only lead to the sainthood way. So the Four Noble Truths only carry part of the third spiritual law, Dhamma Niyama. Dhamma Niyama is very extensive. All of nature's Dhamma, truth, the conditioned and the unconditioned Dhamma, that one fall under Dhamma Niyama. So that one, unless there is a Sammasambuddha, is really impossible to develop the complete understanding. That's why the Paccekabuddha, even when they arise, they can teach, but very limited, very limited. And they cannot produce a sasana, in the sense that their understanding is not complete. Because for that being to have the complete knowledge of the essential Dhamma is not easy. So this essential Dhamma include the law of karma, include a lot of the nature's true spiritual side, especially regarding our awareness nature, leading to its perfection, to realize Buddhahood. That process is very, very tedious, very long, and take eons and eons and eons to cultivate, to perfect. So because of that, ultimately, the ultimate teaching is still Buddhahood, the supreme vehicle. That's why the earlier vehicle that the Buddha actually started off with, the sainthood way, leading to the Paccekabuddha, they were taught during the early stage, during the Theravada traditions era. But during the Buddha's 45 years arising, 2,600 old years ago, while was born in India and became the Sammasambuddha, then he continued to teach or preach, proclaim the Dhamma for the next 45 years. After age 35, he proclaimed for another 45 years until age 80 before his parinibbana. So these 45 years of teaching, he shared a lot of things. He was able to summarize all of life into just four very powerful truth. He called it the Noble Truth. When you understand this truth, you can become noble ones, Aryas, enlightened me. Then he taught the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, leading to the three types of wisdom. Then he expounded all the other suttas related to cultivation, related to Dhamma. Yeah. So those related to cultivation, we already know they are the essential Dhamma. Whereas the ultimate Dhamma is unraveling the law of karma. That's why the five daily contemplation, the five mental hindrance, the spiritual faculty, the seven factors of enlightenment. Then we have the four foundations of mindfulness. Then we have the Noble Eightfold Path. We also have the 37 factors of enlightenment. Then if you were to go through all the sutta, you will come across a lot of teachings. A lot of teachings, the essential Dhamma. So for one who have developed all this understanding, you look at the mind map that we all have in our website, yeah, which Sui helped to create. That one is very comprehensive. It covers almost everything, and there is so much Dhamma involved. That's why essentially it may be said that the Buddha taught only the two vehicles, the Mahayana and the Theravada or Hinayana vehicle. Then sometimes they talk about the three. Yeah? So the first two are actually provisional teachings, or what the Buddha called expedient devices, expedient method or means to bring forth the final teaching, the ultimate supreme vehicle's teaching. That's why this sutta, the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta, was taught. Miaohua, wonderful Dhamma. Lianhua, Lotus Flower Sutta, Jing, this sutta. So this is actually the teaching of the Bodhisattva way, to teach Bodhisattva to make them understand and encourage them to walk this Bodhisattva way, leading to the perfection of the 10 perfection, leading to the realization of Sammasambuddhahood. So this is the sole reason, ultimate teaching, the one and only vehicle, or what the Buddha called the supreme vehicle. So we continue. Throughout the worlds, is the Buddha worlds of the 10 direction. There are not even two vehicles. You could say the two vehicles are the great and the small vehicle, which I have explained. You could also say that they were the two vehicles of the storehouse teaching and the pervasive teaching. This one is the breakdown by Mahayana teaching. They call it the storehouse teaching, or the storehouse consciousness teaching, and the pervasive teaching. How much the less are there three? Three would refer to the addition of a separate teaching. Then the Avatamsaka Sutta is the sudden teaching, a Dhamma for teaching Bodhisattva. This one is like Huining's teaching. However, it also contains the non-sudden teaching within. Thus, the Avatamsaka period was a Dhamma for teaching Bodhisattvas. The storehouse and pervasive teaching were for the Arahats and Pachika Buddhas. The separate teaching was for those of the sound hearer or Pachika Buddha who were about to turn from small and go towards the great vehicle to return to the perfect teaching. So Mahayana categorized them that way. They got the various style of stages of the sutta teachings. You could say the three refer to the sound hearer, which I explained just now, and the Pachika Buddha, and the Bodhisattvas. You could also say it was the storehouse, pervasive, and separate teaching to identify the three, because the Dhamma Flower Sutta is purely perfect and solitary, thoroughly wonderful. Purely perfect means that it is only the perfect, it's the only, purely perfect means that it is the only perfect teaching. I think it should be the other way around. The only perfect teaching. Solitarily wonderful means that only the Dhamma Flower Sutta is completely wonderful. It is the teaching doctrine that is purely perfect and solitarily wonderful. What is the Mandarin word? Chuang Yan. Chun Yan. Du Miao. Du Miao. Chun Yan Du Miao. I think Miao is wonderful. The only wonderful. Du is one. Chun Yan is what? Perfectly pure. Yeah, the English translation, perfectly pure. They use the word solitarily. Du miao, yeah. The remaining teachings, the storehouse, pervasive and special, cannot compare to it. Only the Buddha vehicle is called the perfect teaching. The sound hearer, the Pacheka Buddha, and the Bodhisattva, those three vehicles are all provisional teachings. Sariputta, all Buddhas appear in the world of the five evil turbidity. And this one we have gone through. That is the Kappa turbidity, the affliction turbidity, the living being turbidity, the view turbidity, and the life turbidity. So these five are very difficult period. Kappa means long period of delusion, turbidity. And affliction means a lot of suffering during that time. So kappa, turbidity, affliction, turbidity. Then, of course, living being, turbidity is when living being continue to take birth, unending. Then the view, turbidity, this is the worst period. And leading to life turbidity. The Buddha of the Ten Directions appear in the world to save all living beings. They appear in the world that is evil and turbid in five ways. See? These are the five evil turbidity. You know the meaning of turbid, isn't it? Yeah? Not clear, huh? Turbid. Means like clouded, deluded. The kappa turbidity. What is a kappa? It's a Sanskrit word meaning a division of time, which is very long. Basically, there is no such thing as time. The past, present, and future exist only because living beings discriminate. The kappa is made turbid by the evil offense of living being. So this one is Xuan Hua's explanation, which is quite good. Basically, there is another way to explain this. Because to Xuan Hua, he used this word, basically there is no such thing as time. Well, he used the unconditioned Dhamma to look at it, like the Mahayana Sutta teaching that appear in the I think Diamond Sutta, if I'm not wrong, and often quoted by monks, especially Guang Qing Lao He Sang. Guo qi xing bu ke de, wei lai xing bu ke de, xian zai xing ye bu ke de. Meaning, the three periods of time within the conditioned world, they are not real. They are not a reality. To transcend life, you have to transcend the three periods of time, where they are still within life, within existence. So that is what the teaching is all about. That's why Shen was saying no such thing as time. He's talking about the unconditioned. But in truth, when you understand the mundane mind is basically thinking, leading to psychological time. So when you start to think, when you start to have mental activity, you create a thinking, understand? Not? And that one is not the timeless. It becomes time. The other way to look at it is, like yesterday I saw in the commentaries, CGTN, about a very famous painter, I think. This painter is also very wise. He also has a lot of wisdom. And I forgot his name already. I forgot his name. Feng something, I think. He is very famous. Now, I think he's about 86 years old already. And he liked to draw traditional Chinese calligraphy. And his most famous is the drawing of Lao Tzu on the buffalo. Yeah. The way he described Lao Tzu's teaching is very beautiful. He said Lao Tzu talked about existent and non-existent, the great Tao, yeah, and the uniqueness of the Tao, and why this Tao is so amazingly profound, unique, and beautiful. Then he can relate it to his art, to his drawing. So in a similar way, yeah, through his explanation, you can also understand what I try to explain to you. Before the mind stir, there was no psychological time, no thinking, nothing. So everything is just the way it is. That's why they call it the original nature, the true nature. Then from there, everything arises. So in the painting, is the same. He said, when he put forth the blank piece of paper, there was nothing on it, isn't it? There was no painting, nothing. Then when he starts to input his calligraphic movement, stroke, the painting appear. And that is like existent life. Manifest already. So he described it very beautifully. So because of that, these great painters with a lot of wisdom, because they study the Chinese civilization type of philosophy, and also they call it the wisdom behind their culture, their teachings, and all those things. Especially the Tao. Tao ke Tao, Fei Zhang Tao. So, when you ask about the Tao, what is the Tao? They cannot use the positive to describe. They will use the negative to describe. You say, whatever that can be spoken, or talk about or discuss, that is not the true Tao. But ultimately, they also conclude nothing is apart from the Tao. Yeah. So these are very profound teaching. So words and concepts created by the mundane mind, they are within the conditioned world. They are not the unconditioned Dhamma. That's why you cannot penetrate, cannot realize the truth, cannot see things as they are, cannot give rise to that type of wisdom. So when it comes to the profound teachings of Buddhism, Taoism, or Lao Tzu's teaching, and all the various types of teaching, they are really indeed very profound, very ultimate. Yeah. Okay, so with this, we go back to the sharing. Huh? I have to end soon. Yeah. So the three period of time I explained. Huh? So the kappa is made turbid by evil offenses of living being. So this one is very obvious. Huh? Because living being discriminate through the mundane mind. They discriminate and create duality. Yesterday, Queenie asked that question, which was really good. What is duality? And she asked me to explain, which I explained. And yesterday sharing was, not yesterday, Sunday sharing was very complete. Very beautiful. For those who miss it, you better go and listen to it. Okay. My daughter says she's still converting. She will send later, because quite a lot of work actually. So when it come out, you all can listen to it. So the second type of turbidity is after kappa turbidity is affliction turbidity. This refer to the five dull servant. So they break the three ear root. They add in two more from the mental hindrance to call it the five dull servant. Greed, hatred, and delusion or stupidity. Then they add in the word pride and doubt. These five are the roots from which affliction is born. Actually, the teaching Sakyamuni Buddha only taught three. So pride is also part of the three. Pride is born of delusion, attachment, clinging, craving. Doubt also same, also due to delusion. But when he break it down for you, it's easier to understand what basically Sakyaditi is all about. Sakyaditi is not just self-delusion, because it has self-delusion behind the ego manifest and give rise to pride, give rise to doubt, give rise to fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. That's why all this leads to affliction. The cause of its arising. Then the third one is the living being stability. Living being have all different kind of good and evil causes and conditions, means coming, as well as good and evil retribution. Everyone has his own special evil karma. Living beings are also turbid. So unless you have the Dhamma, it's not easy to understand life. Not easy to have the good life. That's why this is really obvious. The fourth is Viputabidity. The five sharp servants belong here. Wrong view. They are the view of a body. Means you believe this body belongs to you. Then the extreme view. Then the deviant view. This one is the worst. Then the view of prohibitive morality. And lastly is the view of grasping at view. They are all turbid. The last one is the light turbidity. Living being are allotted a certain amount of time in a given retribution body. This is called a lifespan or segmented life. It's also turbid. So our world is made of impure. Our world is made impure by the turbidity of this five period. Like clear water is being made murky. Murky by a handful of dirt. That's why it's known as the world of the five evil turbidities. So Sariputta, it is that in the time of the confusion of the kappa turbidity, living being turbidity, are heavy laden with impurities. The field of their offenses are extremely heavy because they are stingy, miserly. This means that they cannot part with their money. Means selfish, a lot of craving, attachment, clinging, grasping. They hold on to the single penny so tightly that it turned into water. They cannot even let go of a single cent. They are unable to give. So this first one is greed. One who is stingy or greedy is unable to give, but one who is greedy is not only unable to give, he covets others' good, means there is desire, covetousness, craving. Greed is insatiable. People who are stingy and greedy will receive the retribution of extreme poor, being extremely poor. Because they were stingy and never give, they have no blessing, no blessed retribution. Greedy people not only refuse to give, but they are greedy for other people's wealth too. Such greedy hearts. There is a little story which illustrates what could happen to people who are just too greedy. Once there was a very greedy person who died and went to King Yama. King Yama asked him, "You are very intelligent. In your lifetime, you never took any losses to speak of. Next life, as a person, would you rather eat other people's food or your own food?" He thought over it. "If I eat my own food, that is not as economical as eating other people's food and saving mine," he said to King Yama. "I would like to eat other people's food. I do not want to eat my own food." "Fine," said King Yama. "You can go become a pig." "Pig eats nothing but things other people give them. They do not have any food of their own." The people with the greedy heart then realized that he was wrong to want to eat other people's food. But it was too late. King Yama would not alter his sentence, and the man had to go to become a pig and eat other people's food all day long. This is what can happen when you are just too greedy. This is Shen Hua's way of using humor to explain. But the real coming thing is not like that. King Yama won't talk to you like that. It's not he decide. Karma decide. Then the other aspect is envy and jealousy. Envious. Envy means that you are displeased if you see someone or anyone who surpass you. You are jealous of people with talent, smarter than you, or get promoted. When someone is more gifted than you, you cannot stand it. This includes being covetous of members of the opposite side. Jealous people eventually fall. If you are jealous of others, you may be reborn as an animal. Many of the animals you see were once jealous people. Actually, all these are born of sociality. Negative tendency, the evil roots of sociality or self-delusion and hatred, which is part of the evil roots. They call it in Pali dosa, dosa. Whereas greed is loba, loba. Not loba, loba. So that Pali word is very interesting. It's not just greediness. Whatever that hold on to thing, grasp on to thing, cling on to thing, your selfishness, your craving, your covetousness, your desire, your lust, all these are covered under loba. That's why the English word is not so extensively capable of describing the evil roots. Even those are also same. Because anger, hatred, jealousy, envy, even your dislike, your negative emotion and tendency, they are all under the evil root of hatred. And delusion covers a lot of things. Self-delusion can lead to a lot of the greed and hatred. Then it triggers mental suffering like fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, insecurity, phobia, and all those things. They develop unwholesome roots because they were greedy, stingy, and jealous. their accomplishment are worthless. They do many bad things or evil things, and consequently, they grow unwholesome roots, means evil roots, commit evil karma. For this reason, all the Buddha, by means of the power expedient devices within the one Buddha supreme vehicle, make discrimination and speak of three. Originally, there is only one Buddha vehicle. There are no other vehicle. However, if you start right out by telling people or telling living beings to become Buddhas, no one would believe you or follow you. That is why the Buddha of the Ten Directions and Sakyamuni Buddha all first speak of the Dhamma of the small vehicle to guide living beings from the small towards the great. They speak of the sound hearer, the Pachika Buddhas, and the Bodhisattvas. Sariputta, if a disciple of mine call himself Arahant, says that he has already attained the fruit of Arahatship or a Pachika Buddha, but does not hear or know the fact that all the Buddhas, the Tathagatas one, only teach and transform the Bodhisattva. He is not my disciple, or he is not a disciple of the Buddha, nor is he an Arahant, nor is he a Pachika Buddha. So this is a very extreme way of putting it. Why is he not? It is because if he had attained any of those positions, he would certainly believe this wonderful Dhamma which the Buddha spoke. His basic disposition would form a solid foundation for that faith. If he does not believe, then he has not certified to the fruit of Arahantship, Pachika Buddhahood, or provisional Buddhahood's Bodhisattva, provisional vehicle Bodhisattvahood. He is nothing but a person with overweening pride. Okay, we stop here, exactly 9:40, just nice, page 427. Now you'll open up for second session, meditation, reporting, and Dhamma Q&A, question and answer, and Dhamma discussion. You can share also on whatever Dhamma that you have gone through and experienced. Then we can discuss it.
Actually, I'm not prepared to ask anything because, but just Sunday, you taught us the meditation, the relax, and maintain awareness. After the doing the relaxation, which is the key towards mindfulness, because once you relax, the mind actually gets subtler and subtler. And you can see that the thinking
become less.
Become less.
Initially, not so easy, not so straightforward, because you may experience for a while, but you don't continue and develop the stability of it. That thinking is so habitual over the years you have been doing so. What
in the
non-stop, endless thinking. So to reverse it is not so easy. It's like the momentum of thinking has been there. Every moment of sense experience, you react, stir your mind and think. That's why for that mind not to think is like near impossible. That's why a lot of people cannot meditate when it comes to awareness base. They have to use concentration, object of meditation, one-pointedness, they focus. Or an object of meditation to hold on to, like chanting, or Buddha, or even the object of meditation like anapana. Then they focus, they concentrate, or the rising and falling of the abdomen. Then sometimes they use the dynamic meditation. Then sometimes they use various type of skillful verbalization like sama arahang, and all those things. In Thailand, very often they use puto, and try to train the mind get the mind stay centered. Then they develop absorption concentration. But to develop awareness-based meditation, you have to develop a free mind that is by itself quiet, peaceful, tranquil, and there's nothing. And that one is not easy. That one you need to have a lot of understanding. And the fourth support can actually help you train you. And today one, the description that I give, you combine with metta, loving kindness, and mind sweeping method. The early day I used to teach mind sweeping method first to decondition the heedless thinking, then combine with metta to have the wholesome mind, then settle down and do the awareness based meditation. That one will help. So you go back and then to day one, before the meditation start, the instruction, you listen to it attentively. It will help you understand deeper so that you can do it better.
One question. In the past, I used to do metta first. After metta, then I get into awareness as a foundation, as a base to relax. Is it okay?
Okay. That's what I share in the past. In the early day, I advise people to do metta first. That's why I say visualize yourself facing a mirror just now, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, your facial muscle relax straight away. You no need to force it to relax. When you are in a joyous mood, happy, with loving kindness, metta, it is like you radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, means you are happy, you have joy, you are relaxed. Then your facial muscle naturally relax. That's how you should learn how to relax. Then you realize the tension, the stress, the tightness that human beings normally hold on to. Because living beings go through life in a very hectic way. Everything moves at such a fast pace. Our life in today's society is very, very harsh and very fast moving. Information technology, the senses, the thought process, the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the work stress, the pressure. Pressure you got a lot, not only career work, you got society's peer pressure. And you also have pressure from your own family members, from your enemy, from people whom you don't like, and all those things, and many other type of pressure that has been applied to people. Sometimes it's religious, sometimes it's because the society is such they discriminate against that particular race. So all this put pressure on living beings. So they, when they have pressure, they are not relaxed. They're full of fear, worry, anxiety. They are very tense. They have a lot of phobia. That's why you cannot relax. That's why stress build up. Working stress, you know, when you are under pressure to deliver. When they manage you by fear and harassment, they put fear into you, put deadline into you, and they harass you to deliver. And you are not in a position to deliver, and yet you're scared you will not be able to hold on to your job, where they may threaten to fire you or take disciplinary action against you, then dismiss you. So all this gives rise to a lot of what they call unnecessary stress, working career pressure, then from colleagues, society, from the environment, a lot of things can give rise to a lot of unnecessary fear and insecurity. Even the recent earthquake near Turkey and Syria. This is why it's very serious. The whole high-rise building just collapsed like that. And a lot of people died. They lost their home. They lost their loved one. So karma, when it comes, is not for us to say, because you reap what you sow. So all this prevent people from having the ability to relax. That's why you can be a cultivator the way you can develop this awareness-based meditation. It means you know how to relax. You know how to maintain awareness. You know how to settle down. And you will not have much problem. But after that, the Dhamma will keep on arise within you. And you will understand a lot of things. Then you will understand who you are, what you are, how you function as a human. Then you will understand life. Well, when you understand yourself, you understand others. Then when you understand others, you understand the society. You understand life. Then you know how to live life. Then your life will become different. You will not go back to the old way, which is heedless, that gave rise to a lot of problems. So like what you have gone through too, during the early days, I think as a Singaporean, you go to your compulsory service. Or that time, because you are under that compulsory service, so you actually very diligently develop the meditation and all those things. And in Singapore, they call you in off and on for a period of time. Here, we only had it for a while, but not during my time. It's the younger generation. Then after that, they now very quiet already. It's like nothing much has happened already. But for you all, that's why during that time, you actually were very diligent. You meditate. But after that, I think you also go through life. You also go through all these problems, stress and all that. That's why you want to find answers. You are in search for the teaching, but you can't find. Until recently, when you came across my YouTube sharing video, you were very excited. But your base was not there. But you have the affinity to come across such teaching. So, not bad. So, I should say it's good for you. So, my nature rejoices. So, hopefully, you can make use of all this, develop the understanding, then you can become beautiful one day.
Thank you, brother. Actually, you already taught a lot of things that bring back the initial understanding and maybe even expand my understanding.
Correct.
In many
yes.
areas.
Yeah.
Brother, another last question.
Yeah.
Last question. You asked me to read the Heart Sutra. After I read, and also today's teaching, right? There's only one question. I read the Heart Sutra. It was written that there are a lot of terms between the Mahayana school and the Theravada school. They use, actually they are common thing, but their terms used differently. So sometimes we cannot relate. This is what I read in the Heart Sutra.
You are not so familiar with the Pali words.
Pali words is okay. Like for example, anatta and emptiness. Are they same or are they different? This is...
this one is the teaching. It's a good question. I explained to you. You see, when you understand anatta to its depth within the Theravada teaching, where the Buddha teach anicca, dukkha, anatta, then anatta can penetrate into emptiness. But the problem is, under the Theravada tradition, anatta is always defined by another definition. What is the commonly defined definition of anatta?
Non-self.
Non-self, correct, yes. So is emptiness non-self?
Emptiness is more on...
No, the question is very simple. Is emptiness non-self?
Yes.
Okay, you explain why you say it's yes.
emptiness is absence of substance, the permanent substance of all phenomena.
Okay.
That also include the anatta, which the self is actually a moment-to-moment existence, which is not continuous flow or permanent with an independent quality.
Okay.
They seems to be same, but is it same? That's why I
That's why
I need to ask you.
I understand. You are not sure, but you are not that bad. At least you have some form of like, because of your earlier glimpse, that's why you can understand it's moment to moment, but you cannot express it out, you cannot explain it in detail. Because the main teaching that the Buddha taught is anicca, dukkha, and anatta. And how does anicca, dukkha, and anatta come about? The three universal characteristics. Because when you understand the teaching, when you penetrate, you truly penetrate, the first thing that living beings who are mindful can see is the activity, the movement. Everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. That's why they realize the paticca samuppada, dependent, originating, the mind state, the mind processes. Then mind is a forerunner of all things. When mind arises, all things arise. So all this teaching from the sutta, the essential Dhamma, become clear because you have developed mindfulness, awareness, and you saw all this movement. If they are dependent originating, means it's not a permanent unchanging entity. It is impermanent in the sense that dependent on condition, it arises. When condition sustain itself, it continue to exist, but it will fluctuate according to the activity and movement, the intensity of the conditioning. Then when condition cease to be, that phenomena cease to be. So this is the first stage of insight. When you realize and awaken to the truth that this is a universal characteristic, because we live in a conditioned world. Everything that arises is condition arising, dependent originating, causal phenomenal. Without cause, nothing arises. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. Then when you are mindful and aware, you realize you need something to move. You must have an initial condition, like your thought process. How did it start? The teaching say avijja paccaya sankhara. But how do you realize that? What is avijja? They always say ignorant. Ignorant of what? Ignorant of the truth, the Dhamma, the Four Noble Truths, the essential truth that the Buddha has taught. So all the right view that the Buddha has taught, the three types of spiritual law, they are very powerful, very important. So when you have this understanding, you become different. Then you can come to understand clearly the nature's law that governs life and existence. Then the first one is, of course, law of karma, more difficult to see unless the Sammasambuddha arises. Then we have this teaching. But the law of mind is easier. Then after that law of truth, you must go through the cultivation, the extensive observation. Then you understand. But when you understand the dwelling, paticca samuppada, you will understand everything is the way it is, dependent originating, without the initial arising of condition, nothing moves. That's why everything has its beginning. So like thought process, just like I asked, why did the Buddha say avijja paccaya sankhara? So you have to observe, understand, then realize. Forget about the teaching. The teaching can say whatever it like. Avijja, ignorant law. Ignorant of what? They cannot tell you. But at least I gone through, I can tell you, ignorant of the truth, of the noble truth. Especially the three right views, law of karma, law of mind, and law of truth, Dhamma Niyama. So karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama. So why did I say that? Is because in the meditative awareness, I saw the movement. Initially, of course, it's the mind. Then I put to test the law of karma also arise. Then through my past cultivation, my nature also inherit a lot of understanding. That's why I understand a lot of profound thing about the law of karma, which I never learned this life. But I have the understanding because of my nature's past perfection. Then because of that, I saw clearly the characteristics of anicca. Means this is a universal characteristic. Because everything exhibit that characteristic. Everything. That's why from avijja it start. So when we talk about the mind, the movement, how we function, you can silence your mind, observe, and find out how you live life. Then you will know how you function as a human being. Because we always go to our brain, the views, the opinion, the conditioning, the beliefs. From here, you come out and input the content of consciousness and live. That's why you act according to memory. That is not wisdom. That's why the Buddha say, if you use that to live, that is avijja, ignorant. Because it's not the truth. It's not Dhamma. It's not right view, right understanding. So when there is avijja, ignorant, delusion, what does human being do? Because you want to know. That's why you think. You want to experience. You want to find out. You want to reason. You want to analyze. That's why you go and think, believing that thinking can help you. So not understanding, wanting to know, wanting to experience, wanting to do all this, you create thinking. So that is avijja. That's why from delusion, you create sankhara. Avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara is mental activity, mental thinking. And that process go to the brain, your memory, your views, your opinion, your conditioning. So from there, the brain is an organ. When you make contact, it's like the physics experiment, it gives rise to consciousness, where mental consciousness arises. So when mental consciousness arises, like the Buddha said, in the seeing is only that consciousness. No one to see, that pure seeing, the pure consciousness, the seeing consciousness. No avijja, no delusion. But living being who has avijja ignorance straight away associate with the seeing. That's why they input the content of consciousness. They perceive it through their atta, sakayaditi. That's how they stir their mind and react, create duality, then arise the whole mess of suffering following the dwelling, patijasamupanna. So this is how you start to see. Everything is dependent, originating, condition arising. That's why it's universal characteristic. So whatever that is impermanent, the Buddha said, after observation over a long period, you will come to know. They follow nature's law, like the law of karma, the law of mind, the law of truth. If you want things your way, which is not nature's way, then what happened? You will get yourself entangled with this nature's law. Then it will backfire and you will get into trouble. That's why when you understand this, the second universal characteristics of suffering, dukkha, arise. When you see anicca, impermanent, then you will know everything move following nature's law, nature's condition. When the conditions are already set, thing is just the way it is, like the Buddha said, cannot be otherwise. But when you want thing your way, which is not nature's way, through your delusion, self-delusion, sakkayaditti, that condition, your craving, your desire, your like and dislike, your pleasant and bad. So all these things manifest and become evil roots, roots of all evil, make you evil. That's how you develop suffering. So the universal characteristics of dukkha, suffering, arise because of anicca. Because the nature's law. Then if it's impermanent, leads to suffering. Is it right to say, this is me, this is I? Whatever that is impermanent and lead to suffering is definitely not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why that anatta nature surfaced after the first two characteristics. So when this anatta nature surfaced, it means it is not a permanent, unchanging entity where you can cling on to, grasp on to, hold on to, and say, this is me, this is I, and all this can be mine. There is no such thing. If you do that, Sakyaditi said it, you will suffer. That's why it is non-self. You must look at the words, huh? It is neither self or no self. But the Buddha said it's non-self. Means human being exists. The form and mind exist. That's why I want you to read the Heart Sutta to understand the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind. To understand who you are, what you are, and what is the human being all about. That living being all about. If you cannot understand this, you cannot understand what I share tonight. So, if it's this human being is not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, grasp on to, hold on to, and say, this is me, this is I, then who are you? What are you? That's why the Buddha said, this one is a human being, living being, but not a permanent, unchanging entity. It's anatta. But it's related to you, karmically conditional for you to come to this existential world as a living being, to live life. In this particular case, it's a human being. And this one, the Buddha said, is subject to karma, even though the unconditioned, no one born, no one die, no one sick. But within the conditioned world, there is such thing as law of karma, such thing as relationship, human being, living being, life, existence. That is how the teaching becomes difficult to comprehend. And this anatta nature is very deep, very penetrative. You cannot, through your mindfulness awareness, see all the universal characteristics clearly. You cannot awaken. So this anatta nature, yeah, initially is to realize that it's not a permanent unchanging entity. Otherwise, the Buddha say, you could have commanded it. If this body is utter, if it is a permanent unchanging entity, then may it not go that way. May it not lead to suffering. But it can't. May it not grow old, get sick and die. It can't. It go the way of nature. Where through observation in life, you can realize that it is not an esoteric science. It's all day-to-day understanding based on awareness, mindfulness, and pure understanding. So all this will transform us and make us realize that this is not a permanent and changing entity that we can cling on to, hold on to, and grasp on to. Which means this human life or segmented human being that we took birth via our karmic nature, this one is a vehicle and a tool that come for us to live life, to exist within the conditioned world, to experience life to whatever level based on your wisdom or ignorance or delusion. And to also go through the karmic retribution and the karmic process. But when you have the wisdom, the Dhamma, you can live life. You don't have to go through the karmic process. The karmic process is there, but it has got no power over you because of your wisdom. So all this understanding is a complete entity. The conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma. Then when you awaken to this, then you can penetrate deep into anatta. nature, which is profound emptiness or true emptiness. If everything is not a permanent unchanging entity, like you say moment to moment, but you cannot describe it. Because as far as the living being is concerned, there is a Mandarin saying, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong, na mo si zu, he bi ku ku, wei kong, liu lei. Do you understand this saying?
Yeah, I understand.
You
Can you hear
understand?
me?
Describe and see.
What you said is
Ah.
come is empty, go is empty. Why should you weep for emptiness? This
Okay,
is your
what
word.
is the coming empty? Coming empty means when you are born into this world, you didn't bring along anything, isn't it?
Yes,
That's why
yes.
it's empty. Then when you pass away, you cannot own anything, isn't it? That's why you cannot bring along anything, isn't it? That's why it's also empty. Then in between, why did you grieve over emptiness? So the in-between is the empty nature of existence. Do you understand? Because it's all anatta, dependent originating. Even the form and mind is dependent originating. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. You need three things to give rise to the human being. Now, this one you go and read the Heart Sutta, it's inside there. The five aggregate of form of mind, the two aspects, and all this teaching. It's all in the Heart Sutta. This is why I want you to go through the Heart Sutta. Then only you can develop the clear understanding. Then later on, you will become different. You will become very good at developing all this Dhamma understanding, stabilizing what you have only learned, the bits and pieces. Then not able to give clear, stable understanding to all the teaching, because you get excited, then you learn here, learn there, learn a bit here, there, then you didn't go into the detail to develop the clear understanding to stabilize on. That's why you cannot understand. You have a lot of questions, you have a lot of doubt, then you are not sure anything. I won't blame you because you approach Dhamma from that direction. But you are not bad because you have the affinity to actually come into contact with this type of teaching and willing to listen and learn from it. And that is a beautiful condition for you to receive this type of teaching. Otherwise, if you got karmic obstruction, like I say, it will obstruct you from listening, from understanding. Unless you ask for forgiveness, break the karmic obstruction, then slowly, slowly, you will have the faith and you will listen attentively. Then you will break free to develop the understanding. So far, not so bad. Based on the last two sessions, I think you have the faith and you are starting to develop more progress, which is a good sign. Okay, and so emptiness and anatta, when you understand profoundly, is the same. Okay.
Understood. Yeah, what you are saying from the Heart Sutra is a form and emptiness, they are one, they are not two. It's a
not
pure.
Only one. The Heart Sutta say form does not
yes.
differ from emptiness.
Ah, yes. This is what you're trying to tell me. 空即是色，色即是空.
Yeah, lah. That's why form is emptiness. But emptiness does not differ from form. Do you know why or not? Do you know why or not? 为什么色即是空? Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. And form does not differ from emptiness. Do you understand those words? You cannot take it just philosophically and thought you understand. If you talk to a normal lay person, you think you can convince him? He will tell you always, say, this table solid is form. Why you say it's empty? My physical body, solid. I can do what I like. Why you say it's not me? Why you say it's form? It's emptiness. You cannot answer. But those who have the understanding, they can answer. There are three levels of understanding all this. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Yeah. You want to try or not? How do you explain form is emptiness? Emptiness is form. And form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. Adam, you want to try?
My understanding, I don't know correct, but this is very
You try.
unconditioned.
You can try.
It's just like if you don't see, if you don't know darkness, how you know light? If there's no light, how you know darkness? When thoughts arises,
That one
when thoughts arises.
is playing you words, Sanasana.
Yeah.
It is not the real thing. Okay, I explain to you the first way, then maybe you understand. Okay. The solid form, let's say a box, could be a square box or a rectangular box. Okay. Let's say solid wood. Okay. So that one is form, isn't it? Sir, isn't it? Element, isn't it?
Yes.
Before that form arises, what was that space? What was that space?
I don't know.
That solid form occupied a space, eh?
Yes.
So that space, is there anything? Of course, scientifically, you say there is air, understand? True or not?
Yes.
But when you put the form there, the air cannot be there, is it?
Yes.
So, it is empty space. So, form is actually that space before it arises. That's why form does not differ from the empty space that it occupies. That's why form is actually empty. That emptiness can also be filled with form. But this is what nature is. And that is the first extremely easy explanation. But the second one and the third one is very, very much more profound and difficult to comprehend. You have to read the Heart Sutta. I explained that all in the Heart Sutta. It's related to mindfulness, awareness, paticca-samuppada and all those things. Otherwise, you cannot. Because in the teaching, I teach them how to see form, the unreality of form. When you can see the unreality of form, then only you can see beyond form. Do you understand? So I give you this hint. You go and read the Heart Sutta, then try to find out and develop the understanding. This one is a second.
Thank you. Thank you.
You better slowly go and read it up. Try to develop the understanding.
Thank you.
Because these are very basic teachings, and the understanding can be there when you are mindful, aware, and you can see and understand all this. Yeah. So, not until you can see form, you cannot see mind. Because form is very gross. Whereas mind is subtle, less solid, and is not a form, not so obvious. That's why when you can see form, then only you can penetrate form. So to see form, you must understand how it arises and how it disappears. That's why form is dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, all related to the teaching. Then you must understand through your observation, mindfulness, the unreality of form. Then when you penetrate the unreality of form, then you can see beyond form. It's also related to the Sixth Patriarch Platform Sutta about the two monks arguing about the flag and the wind. You heard of this analogy, Adam? The flag
Yes,
或 the wind?
不是心在动，不是风在动。
Yeah la, the final answer is 你的心动 is not the wind and the flag. But why did Hui Ning say that? That one is just at the that level that the two monks, because these are Novik monks, they can't even see form. How can they go beyond form? So Hui Ning take them by giving them a Gong An and say, your mind move. Means, instead of understanding form and seeing form, the next level should be your mind. When you use your mind to observe with mindfulness, then you see beyond form. But how do you know that form? It comes from mind. Understand? Mind create. Just like the Buddha said, mind is a forerunner of all things. But when you move further down and read the Sixth Patriarch's poem, where he tear off Sun Xiu's poem, what did Hui Ning say?
本来无一物，何处惹尘？
That one is the end. Initially, 菩提.
本无树，清净一杯台。
Don't go so fast. I want you to understand the meaning. 菩提本无树. What is the meaning?
Verily, there is no body tree. The body is not body tree.
Like that, you read from the text. You don't understand. 菩提 is Bohi. Bohi is enlightenment. Understand? That's like Bohi tree, tree of enlightenment under which the Buddha sat. So 菩提本无树 means wisdom, Bohi, has nothing to do with a Bohi tree or a tree, understand not? 菩提本无树. Then, the second one, 明镜亦非台. What is the meaning?
The mirror, there's no mirror.
There's neither the mirror nor the stand. The mirror bright nor the stand. Because 明镜亦非台. That one refers to what? Since you cannot understand, he do mindfulness using the thought process. He thought by noting that is the awareness. That is not the awareness. That is the mundane mind. The mundane mind keep on noting and doing. That's why since he was trapped there. So he said that 明镜, which the sensu try to hold on to, that one is not the true mind. That is the mundane mind, understand? That's why in the poem by sensu, he say our body is like a bohi tree, xing ru pu ti su. Then the mind is like a mirror bright on a stand. That is the mundane mind. That's why he cannot penetrate. Then the third verse is the best. 本来无一物. Originally, it's empty. That is the true mind. Understand not? Then, 何处惹尘埃? Because you created dust, which is defilement, the duality. Since you do the Theravada tradition by of cultivation, avoid evil, do good, purify the mind, polish until it shines so that the dust cannot alight. That is not cultivation. That is delusion, holding, clinging, grasping, try to push away the dust, defilement. Because, like the Buddha say, when you create the one, the opposite will arise. Well, this is duality, yin and yang, like the Lao Tzu's teaching. The Buddha say, Ismas means sati idang hoti. When this arise, that arise. Imas mean asati idang arhoti. When that ceases, this also ceases. What is the meaning? This is duality. When you create good, automatically whatever that is not good is what? Bad, isn't it? So defilement is the same. Wholesome state, my state, and defile my state. But you created it to duality using the mundane mind, and you want to do away with it. How can you destroy your own duality? You can't. You have to go beyond the mundane mind or the thinking mind that create duality to realize the truth. When you don't create, when you don't have dust, then is there the opposite? There is no opposite. We originally is empty. The true mind, that nature, got no words, no concept. Nothing is like that. Not even the pure awareness. So where can the dust lie? You can't. That's why he tear him apart. What I'm trying to tell you is, Hui Ning already realized the state that is beyond thought from the poem. Then why did he tell the monk, your mind move? Do you know the Zen story didn't end there? That flag and the wind story continue. That is the intermediate only. Do you know the second part?
Don't know.
Adam?
Don't know.
You want to know?
Yes, please.
Okay. It seems later on, after the six patriarchs passed away, there was a group of disciples and monks. They were at this temple trying to understand all this. Why did Hui Ning say the mind move? Then there was a lady, yeah, who actually cooked for them and actually served them, make offering, dana and all those things. But this lady already gone beyond the Arahant stage. She was a bodhisattva, and she can read their mind, and she can know what they like. And every day the food come out, the monk were very amazed. It's the food they want. Yeah. Then as they were discussing, why did Hui Ning tell this two knowing monk, your mind move? This lady passed by, you know. You know what she said or not? She just said this word, you know, where got mind? Almost all the monk there become Arahant, awakened. That is to take them beyond mind, understand? But the mind is the next level of the form. If they can't see form, how can they see mind? So the first stage of teaching, like the wonderful Dhamma flower, Lotus Flower Sutta, is to give them the expedient devices to learn the next step. If you cannot see form, how can you see mind? So the Kong'an is to lead them to see mind. After they can see mind, then only can see beyond mind. So the moment the lady say, where got mind, almost all the monk become Arahant. But they realize that was the mundane mind. Understand? So without mind, your true nature manifests. And they have been meditating. They have been learning the Hui Ning's three hallmark. The first one is Wu Nian. So without thought, they are straight away with the true nature, with the true mind. Then they awaken to the whole thing. Then it's like the poem. Originally, there was nothing. Without the mundane mind that create the concept, the words, the labeling, the perception, the activity. So you want to add something? Take the mic.
Okay, Amitofo, Kalinamitas, I wanted to share something because there were a lot of indications throughout the explanation just now that prompted me to share an analogy. So understanding sunyata and understanding anatta, I'm hoping this analogy helps. How I understand it is like the relationship between air and wind. So understanding sunyata is like understanding air, and then understanding anatta is understanding wind. When you understand air, you will understand wind, and when you understand wind, you will know how it produces good results and bad results. When wind blows, you can use it for good, cook for hot days, wind, strong wind, how it becomes bad, you get typhoon and all those things, so good and bad. So in the same way, understanding anatta helps us live life without getting afflicted by suffering. So I that is how I view sunyata and anatta, emptiness and non-self. I hope that gives some clarity. Sadhu.
Sadhu, let us rejoice. That is one of the good way to give rise to contemplative wisdom, because like she said, anatta is that living being, anasana. That one is anatta, non-self. So because that one is not a permanent unchanging entity, that's ultimately is empty, but the emptiness is the ultimate one. But to live life, you have to understand this form of mind is subject to karma, anasana. Like her analogy, which is very good. Originally, sunyata or empty nature is like nothing inside there. But he liked to use the word air. Air. Well, air, without any condition to move it, it cannot become a wind. It's dependent originating. When it becomes a wind, initially like a breeze, it cools you down. You feel good. That's why you're on the fan. But when it becomes typhoon, it's not something you want. When it becomes very violent, it's not something you want. So the four elements can trigger a disaster. That's why from the four elements, everything comes to be. Because this is the condition world. So when you understand from emptiness, thing can arise. And the one that trigger of thing to arise, the mundane mind, the thinking mind. That's why that mind, mano, mind is a forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arise, all things arise. Very good, Sadhu. Today's sharing is very good. Okay, Adam, time is up. Hope
thank
you
can
go and reflect on it. Read through the Hasutta. My advice is don't be too eager to know.
Thank you.
Unless you understand the Hasutta, all this that I have explained is all in the Hasutta, you will not be able to follow as fast as you're supposed to be. But not bad, not so bad. You have your path, which is quite good, but there is a lot of thing you need to understand to stabilize your understanding. That's why it's like meant to be so far so good. So let us rejoice. Thank you so much for your good sharing, Adam.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we will share all these merits with all the beings, starting with the devas. Aka sata cha bumata devanaka mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakkhantu loka sasana itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan Sabe deva anuodantu sabasampati siddhya idang menya tinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo Devo asatukalina sasa sampati hetu cha vito bhavatu lokocha raja bhavatu dhammiko imena punyang kamena mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, you can now pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we will end the whole Zoom session. Thank you, sadhu.